Welcome to Analytics of Dynasty, a daily podcast. I'm your host, Jordan McNamara. We are turning here to a Thursday, 30 minutes of trades. And we've got a series of them here. Actually, some from the trade database and actually a couple not. So we'll go through some of the ones from the trade database. Again, you can find that all over at analyticsofdynasty.com. J.K. Dobbins and a second for Austin Eckler. I don't typically like moving up at running back, but I find this one an awesome deal. This is a really good deal in terms of really adding upside, really adding ceiling, really improving your odds of a difference maker. I've talked significantly about J.K. Dobbins, some of the limitations with J.K. Dobbins, specifically in terms of some of the ceiling stuff. Again, I thought he did well this year. It's a good story. He came back and did some of that stuff well. What he lacks, though, I think is the ultimate ceiling of a difference-making wide running back one. A couple of reasons for that. Number one, they don't throw it a ton. And number two, when you look at what their usage of the running back position is. They rank 32nd in halfback or running back routes per dropback. I break it up a little bit so that way it's not including fullbacks, but halfback routes per dropback, which is not good. And that's been a consistent trend in this offense, right? 17.9 expected points per game, which you would think in an offense that has Lamar Jackson, that's going to run a ton, that's going to do all these things, that there's going to be a lot of opportunity. 17.9 ranked 31st in the league. Dobbins had one target per game. He ranked 35th in points per game. He ranked 45th in expected points per game. So he overproduced by about a point. However, like, it's still only a running back three type finish. So again, I like the story with Dobbins. I liked him as a player coming out. The profile, especially the lack of receiving, is going to make it really, really hard for him to be a difference maker. On the flip side of this, you got Austin Eckler's coming off a running back one finish. He had a running back two finish last year. He's going to be 28 in 2022. He's heading into a contract year. He deserves a raise. He's one of the few running backs in recent history who's actually been underpaid on a veteran deal. I think it's a great trade, right? Because I think this is one where you're making it a spot where Austin Eckler is a lot more likely to be on a contending championship buy type team than J.K. Dobbins is. And I don't think the price of a second is that much to pay. So I love this deal. The second one here, I don't actually think this is super realistic. So I don't know what happened here. This is well below market, but it was such a good it's such a good reminder of some of the processes that we think about, that we go through, that bring us to believe that players are probably overvalued or that we don't necessarily love their profiles, but there's a price. You take a price for that. There's always a price that you can take. So this one's Kirk Cousins, Isaiah Pacheco, a third, a fourth, and a second in 2024 for Justin Fields. Again, I'm not sure how that actually happens. The market's extremely hot on Fields. You don't have anyone really hot on the other side. And you're trading basically a situational running back, or a quarterback in his mid-30s, and some middling picks for a first-round startup pick. I don't know how that happens. And maybe this is like the outlier of outliers, right? Maybe something like that is going on. But I think it's a really good learning point. I'm bearish on Fields. I don't think you trade the top of the market. I don't think you trade or value someone way at the top of the market when they're basically at the high end of what you could reasonably expect for them rushing, and they're at the low end of what you reasonably expect for them as a passer, right? Because the passing is a lot harder to go up. The running is really easy to come down. So as a general rule, I'm pretty skeptical of Justin Fields. He also doesn't fit on, you know, multiple hits, for example, right? So while I do think that there's like upside and ceiling for him, like I liked him coming out. I actually liked him coming out better than I like Lawrence, but you know, the lack of pedigree, right? He wasn't a top 10 pick, even though we kind of treat him like it because it was a deep class. And In all of those things, right? It gives me a little bit of pause, right? What do they know that we didn't, right? Why was Zach Wilson, despite his flaws, so consensus above Justin Fields? Why was Trey Lance? Same, right? Same question with a ton more question marks than Justin Fields did. Why was he so consensus above above Justin Fields, right? I think there's legitimate questions to ask about his profile. That all said, right, when you get a chance to consolidate Cousins, Pacheco, and some other picks that aren't valuable into a first-round startup pick, you do it, and then you figure it out later. It's a major step forward in terms of building your team. You make the best deal you can now, and then you spend the next 6, 7, 8 months either deciding, right? If you're skeptical on Justin Fields, I would say, like, decide sooner rather than later. But you get to spend that time. You can gather more information. And then strike the best deal for you, right? I've made jokes that you can get Josh Allen for Justin Fields plus at some point in the offseason, right? That's only a little bit joking, right? So that would sort of be my angle there, right? Take Fields, figure it out later, figure out fit later. That's a classic example of this. I don't think this deal is super realistic of something you can get done, but I think it's very illustrative of some key points in dynasty trading. All right, next up, you get CeeDee Lamb for Christian Kirk and Dallas Goedert. So this is 1.75 PPR for tight end, so Goedert gets a real boost in this, and you're likely playing him in a weekly lineup, even as a flex play if he's not your tight end one. I did go ahead and break down some of the stats here for Christian Kirk and CeeDee Lamb. When you look... just some percentile ranks, for example, this past year, 70th percentile in terms of targets per route run for Christian Kirk and 91st percentile for CeeDee Lamb. Yards per route run, 79th percentile for Christian Kirk, 92nd for CeeDee Lamb. Expected yards per route run, 64th percentile for Christian Kirk, 92nd percentile for Lamb. So Lamb, higher expectation, higher performance, right? He's performing as well on a like 99th percentile type route involvement as well, 97th percentile for Christian Kirk. So lots of involvement there, lots of targets, lots of usage there for Lamb sort of across the board. And when you look at it, one of the things that actually kind of breaks them into being a little bit closer actually is some of the target stuff and some of the route stuff. So it was actually 36.5 routes per game for Christian Kirk. You have 33.6 for CeeDee Lamb. The targets, though, that's 8.7 for CeeDee Lamb, 7.2 for Christian Kirk. All that's to say, you know, Lamb much more in the wide receiver one range, Kirk much more in that wide receiver two range. It's not a huge difference. It's a couple points a game. So you have to ask yourself, you know, is that an expectation you have going forward? Is that sort of a difference you can make up even if, you know, Lamb kind of performs at this and Christian Kirk's either at this or falls? Then you have to kind of consider Dallas Goedert. I think the key to this is Dallas Goedert. I think you make this trade down at the wide receiver position for what I think is a premium player at a premium position, right? So you look at this, there's one premium player at a premium position in this format. It is Dallas Goedert. So I would take the Kirk and Dallas Goedert side. Goddard's going to more than make up with this. And you almost could say in this format, it's not all the way there, but I actually think Dallas Goedert's closer to CeeDee Lamb in terms of the asset, like value, than Christian Kirk is. So Kirk more than makes up the difference, right? He's 75-80% at Lamb, we'll say, and Goedert is a big shot in the arm, right, for your team. So I love this one as a roster construction. Darius Slayton for a second. That's easy peasy the second. Michael Carter to Tyler Conklin. This is 2 PPR. And I think one of the things I look at with this one is you think about, again, I think about premium positions, right? This appears to be a safe leagues league that this trade occurred in. And so you think about, like, I come down on these, neither of them are premium players. I come down on the simple question of which guy is more replaceable. And I think it's pretty clearly it's Michael Carter. I don't think he's a guaranteed lock to be the injury away guy. Zonovan Knight played well enough. We'll see what happens with Breece Hall coming back. But I don't think you're ever going to feel like super great about Carter, even playing him in a spot start, at least in the next year or so, is kind of my projection. Conklin, it could be sort of a usable tight end, a second tight end, something like that, especially if they get an improvement at quarterback. I could see that. And you sort of come back and say, all right, well, which one of these is more replaceable? Am I going to get something close to an every down tight end, or am I going to get an injury away running back more easily? I think it's Conklin, right? This doesn't knock your socks off when you make this deal, but I think it's one that really keeps you, it really kind of keeps you heading in the right direction when you sort of think about, you know, am I attacking premium positions? Am I attacking premium positions? You're going to hear probably that a lot from me. It's going to see, if you listen to every minute of every show, you're going to think like, all right, like we got it. But I do think it's important to sort of hit on that, because what happens is the premium positions become much less, much more difficult to replace, where the non-premium positions, right? We can cycle through backup running backs, right? We're looking in the aggregate, right? So we don't necessarily need to make specific bets. And if the specific bets we make are able to address a premium position, right, that's fine. And then we can recycle that backup running back spot. We can optimize it later on, right? I like that deal quite a bit from that perspective. Again, I don't necessarily, none of the players in this really knock my socks off, but I would take Conklin over Carter for all of those reasons. Brock Purdy deal, not a ton of Brock Purdy action in the database. Haven't seen a ton of trades for him. Yeah, I think a later second is something in lines of what I would be willing to give. I probably wouldn't take that. I would probably take something, you know, bordering on an early second. I just think that, like, sometimes there's players that you say, like, I'd rather kind of hold this and it turn to dust than to sort of sell short. And the reason I say that is because, like, there's a real chance Brock Purdy's got real outs to be a week one starter next year. You're not going to get that in the late second of a rookie draft. Like, maybe you get it in the early second. Maybe that's a piece to get one in the early second. I just don't think you're going to get that in, like, after 206, right? In a playoff first, that's not what's ever there, right? It's Daniel Jones was even, like, much maligned and was sort of off the board by that point. You know, so like, I don't want to take that late second. And again, I think kind of at worst, he's a quality injury away guy. Yeah, you know, how much value that has to you if he loses out on a job, that's a whole different story. But I'd rather swing and miss doing that. Like, I don't know. I just think if you give him away for 210, it's just kind of a capitulation. So I wouldn't do that. Yeah, that's kind of the valuation price point that I see him. So Brock Purdy in this deal for Skylar Thompson and a 2023 third. That's cheap Purdy, so you definitely take that. All right, next up here, we've got Jerry Jeudy, Mike Williams, and Zonovan Knight for Garrett Wilson and KJ Osborne. I think it's a really good consolidation trade, moving from Jeudy and Williams into Garrett Wilson. Again, KJ Osborne doesn't move the needle a ton. Like, there's some metrics there that you can kind of take a look, see at, and be like, huh. You know, kind of do the old, huh, type of deal. If they can't adjust the position, is he potentially wide receiver two on the other side of Justin Jefferson? Not an inconceivable outcome. I just looked at some of the stuff just to give you a kind of an idea of what where Garrett Wilson, Jeudy, and Mike Williams are in this, all this stuff. Just in terms of points per route run, actually Jeudy 0.45, 0.38 for Mike Williams, 0.37 for Garrett Wilson. Garrett Wilson actually had the highest expected points per route run, a 0.42 as a rookie, pretty good. 0.40 for Jeudy, 0.35 for Mike Williams. So Wilson underperforming points per route run. Geez, I wonder why. Like, the quarterback situation was pretty crummy. I will say the quarterback situation wasn't great for Jeudy, and he overperformed it, so that's actually a compliment. Jeudy, with a hit this year, sort of puts himself in a different arc, so good on him there. You know, getting on the board in year three, which is really the crucial point. Again, I'm a little bit below market on Jeudy, but that is a positive indicator. He's kind of strung it together for a season, even if it wasn't necessarily a great outcome. Probably even still, given all that, has underperformed his price. When you look here at some of the route participation stuff, you see Garrett Wilson 92nd percentile. It's 77th percentile for Judy, 69th for Mike Williams. Of course, he missed a bunch of time. Targets per route run, 86th percentile for Garrett Wilson, 82nd percentile for Judy, 66th percentile this past year for Mike Williams. So again, you start to see some of the Garrett Wilson stuff really jump out. Expected yards per route run, 83rd percentile for Wilson, 80th percentile for Judy, 68th for Mike Williams. Again, there's a big difference there. Mike Williams actually does better over expectation than the other two guys do. And, you know, then you start looking at, you know, some of the points per route run and the expectation and all that stuff. Like, Wilson has a really good expectation, especially for a rookie. So I think that really points in a good direction. Again, I sort of saw this as two contributors to a star. I think you make that deal. That's kind of how I view this one. Next up, we've got Dalvin Cook for a second. I just kind of put this one like early second. I don't have the specific number on the pick, but I just put early second. Listen, I think this is cheap. You're looking at kind of a first round wide receiver in that range. If it's 201, you know, you're looking first round wide receiver. Maybe it's a day two running back. Maybe you can sort of reset the clock there. Listen, I understand the desire to sell Dalvin Cook. I don't think this is the way to do it. You're going to get a shadow week one starter, right? I think even if he's cut, which I've been sort of, I don't know, I guess more in tune with that, I guess, is an idea than maybe, you know, some others. Like, so part of me is like, am I a worrywart? We'll see. But he's declining in terms of production and in value, but I do think he gets a shot at being a starter, whether it's in Minnesota or whether it's someplace else for another year. 14.5 points per game. He was right at 14.9 in terms of expected points per game, so kind of right in line there. Again, that's not going to blow you over, but it's very usable stuff from that range. I think it's still a better bet than a mid or a late second. He's in line with an early second and keep trade cut. I think if you're going to sell, like, the deal isn't to sell him for like 202. The deal is to sell Cook and 202 for, you know, a move up into the first, right? Like, you want to get to 107, something like that, or 106, somewhere like that's kind of the move that you make, right? If that's how you want to sort of treat Dalvin Cook, if you think he's worth like an early second round pick, you package him and move him up, or you package him and move him across positions, right? You take him and you say, all right, I'm going to go, you know, him, and I'll even add to him to get me, you know, a boost across positions, whether it's at wide receiver or something like that, right? That's much more the way I'd rather use him than just straight turn him into a pick, because I think that's kind of giving him away. And honestly, like, you might be able to do better in season if he has a couple of good games, right? So that's kind of the angle that I would say there. All right, next up here, we got Pacheco and Pat Freiermuth for Matthew Stafford, Amari Cooper, and a 2023 second. So instantly, the way that I thought about this deal was, okay, Pacheco in a second, cross him off, close enough, just sort of set him aside for a second. You come back to it, it's Freiermuth for Stafford and Cooper. I'd hesitate a bit with this in a 2 PPR format because you really have like what I think can be a difference maker in Freiermuth. This was a 2 PPR format where it was made. You do have what I put out on Twitter actually today, or I guess yesterday by the time I'm actually recording this. Basically, who are the guys, you know, how many guys could finish as tight end one next year, right? I think the answer is six, right? It's going to take something, a major fall off from Kelsey for that to occur. You know, if he were to sort of walk off into the sunset after the Super Bowl, like, I could, it's not going to be him, right? There's going to be somebody else. Or if he were to massively decline, something like that, it's going to take a big decline for him. And it's honestly probably going to take a big decline from Andrews for it to be someone other than those two guys. Someone put out there to say, like, I think there's like an 80% shot that's one of the two of them. Like, you know, that seems like a logical number somewhere in that range. That's fine. And they said, so basically two. Well, I said, no, it's not really two then. It's much more probably like six or seven, if that's true, right? If you're sort of saying 20% to other people, there's a bunch of other people that could qualify. Kittle, right? I think Kittle has to be in that conversation. Not sure Waller is anymore. We'll have to see with the new quarterback and all that stuff. We'll have to see where that goes. But I think it's Kittle. Pitts. I would put him in that category just because you could see the volume and you saw the, you know, the yards per route run and sort of the efficiency in his rookie season. You could see that happen. You know, and then Goddard would be a name that I would put in there as well. And then Hockenson, right? So I think it would be Kelce, Andrews, Kittle, Hockenson, Waller as being the Hockenson and Goddard as being the guys that I think could really do it. I think if you come back after that and you say, all right, like who else could be sort of in there? I think it's tough for Joku to get there. It's probably tough for Ingram to get there. I think what you end up seeing is you get after Pitts, after Andrews, after Kelce, Hockenson, Kittle, and Goddard, who's actually the top six in Dynasty. I didn't even know that as I was going through this exercise, according to Keep Trade Cut. Freiermuth would be the next one that I think was top of mind. He's actually seventh. I didn't even realize that this was actually the ordering of them. I just kind of went down the group of guys that, hey, they could be high volume, and hey, on a yards per route run basis, they're really good. So Hockenson still, like, he's a bit more, he would really need to take a step forward in terms of yards per route run. There was a signal of that when he was in Minnesota. It takes an elite season and a ton of volume to do it. He hasn't done that yet, but if you were to say, like, hey, Cousins is going to pepper him kind of like he did this year, I think he has to be in the range of outcomes. You know, and then Goddard, right? If something were to happen to AJ Brown, he's basically to be the two in that offense, right? You kind of look at it like he would be the heir apparent to kind of the that Mark Andrews breakout profile, right? That's kind of what it looks like currently. After that, Freiermuth would be the next one. So I just don't think he's got enough volume to get all the way there. He wasn't playing enough routes and those sorts of things. But if you told me that someone after that's going to do it, it would be him. And then I think it's probably a tier break. I would have a hard time seeing anyone else do it, would sort of be what I would say. I'd have a really hard time seeing someone else from that far down go all the way to one, just because it doesn't happen. So that sort of leaves you with, like, all right, what do you think about Freiermuth? All right, because that's what I think this ultimately comes down to. If you believe that he is an elite tight end, you have a hard time making this deal. However, if you believe that he's much closer to Joku than he is Andrews, you do this deal. So I think this largely comes down to what you think about Freiermuth. I think I would take the Stafford and Cooper side. I like Freiermuth. I think that there's a lot of outs on the other side, right? This feels like depressed Stafford. Cooper will help you, right? This is a roster construction trade with Cooper. You have a couple of ways out. And even if Stafford were to retire tomorrow, it's not going to happen. But if he were to retire tomorrow, it would be totally useless next year. I think you can still pace, right? You're going to lose the deal. I think you're going to lose the deal because I think Freiermuth is going to outproduce anyone else in the deal. But Cooper's enough to say, like, all right, at least I'm not going to hemorrhage. Right, I'm not going to hemorrhage, and at least he'll sort of be a stopgap to, you know, if Freiermuth is like my first flex in this format or something like that, at least Cooper can sort of get, you know, he's going to make it so you're not going to bleed from that position, right? So that would be the deal that I would do. It feels like cheap Stafford, you know, but I do think contextually a lot of this matters, right? I think this is probably a good way to attack a depressed quarterback if you're going to do it. So those are really all the ones from the database. So I actually went and we've engaged in some Twitter debate about some stuff here in some different trades. I just wanted to talk about one because I think it's really interesting in terms of how, there's people on the other side of it. My was that I'd like to report a murder was the deal. It was Josh Jacobs. It was Josh Allen, Josh Jacobs, Travis Etienne, and Drake London for Fields, Burks, 103, 101, and a couple of later picks a couple of years from now. So I don't really care much about sort of the later picks. It's a third next year. Sorry, it's a third. It's two thirds next year and a second from 2025. So just sort of set that aside for a second. Come back. How did I sort of think about this deal? Well, I thought about you could think about it in a couple of ways. The first thing that I saw was we could go London and Burks. How do you compare them? The other thing you could think about is like, all right, London versus 103, right? I think that's a valid debate. Let's just for the sake of argument say it's London versus Burks. I'm taking London over Burks. It might not necessarily be a huge edge, but I think it's an edge, right? And so, like, I don't love to make a ton of those bets at high leverage, but if I'm going to bet on someone in class that's not named Olave or Wilson, you know, it's going to be London, right? Over Burks, over Dotson, for sure there. And Jameson Williams is a firm and complete. So, London, I think, is a clear three, and I think he's clearly ahead of Burks. So that would be the initial part. The next thing that I would do, I would say ETN versus 103, and I would take ETN over 103. So you already got an edge on both those sides. That leaves basically Jacobs and Allen versus Fields and 101. I think you could make a really good argument that that you would take Allen alone there over Fields, but Jacobs's involvement. Chad and I had a discussion about this, like, if you know, basically what running back the construct of the question was, it was 101 or 107 and Derrick Henry, and that was a start one quarterback, right? So it's much shallower in terms of valuation there, the picks. And we went through an exercise of like, all right, who would need to be the running back in there? You'd take the running back. And it's like an alarmingly low number of people. It might be like two or three was kind of what we came down to, right? McCaffrey, you know, Taylor, like Breece Hall, like it's, you know, Kenneth Walker we could talk about. You know, that's probably where I would start debating. You know, and it, I would sort of reset the clock on Jacobs, I think, if that was the case, right? I think that would be the clear thing to do there. So it's kind of the context which I thought about it. But I sort of look at this one and I say, all right, what am I trading here? Right? What am I trading? I'm trading an elite quarterback in Allen and Jacobs, who, you know, is going to be fine to sort of hunker down the running back position here probably for a couple of years, right? And I'm trading him for a quarterback that's essentially trading as high as he can because of running, which I think is unsustainable long term, despite a lack of passing, which I think is unsustainable long term. So basically the two things that you look for are both in the wrong directions, right? You want a passing quarterback that you think has rushing upside. You don't want a rushing quarterback who you hope has passing upside. That's a bad combination. And even if you look historically, the big rushers that have broken out, like Lamar Jackson, did so on really good passing stuff, right? He won his MVP in a really good passing season where he had 9% touchdown percentage, right? 9% of his throws went for touchdowns, right? That's what you need to sort of do it as a rusher, right? You have to be a passer, and you can't sustain it being just a rusher. And so that's the concern that I have with Fields. And again, he has some of that offseason risk as well. You know, they could trade him and all that stuff. So this is a clear Allen side victory to me again. And then you sort of bring back, you're like, all right, I'd take the London side over the Burks. Like that's all nice. And I think all the other stuff sort of washes out. You don't necessarily worry about that much in the Allen side. So, I said I'd like to report a murder. That's why I went through the deal as I did. I know some other people picked up on it as well. All right, one last one here that I found amazing. And again, these things happen, which is kind of incredible to me that they happen. They occur. But there's a Mahomes deal out there that I was pretty stunned about that someone actually passed along to me. And it was Patrick Mahomes for 102, a 2024 first, a 2025 second, and George Pickens. You don't do deals like this. You don't do deals like this. This is a fleecing for Mahomes. Non-premium position, quarterback one, a future first, and a future second. that is a windfall for the person getting Mahomes, right? Those are the deals that you do, right? Those are when you trade future picks. That's why you hold on to future picks for those types of deals. All right, that'll do it here for this edition. Until next time, continue to embrace the variance. We'll talk again very soon.